Center. The following is a paid program. The opinions expressed are solely those of the sponsor and not necessarily those of WFAS or its advertisers.
Peace of mind with Lippman Brooks.
Welcome to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Lippman Crooks. We're based right here in White Plains and also have offices in Fishkill and New York City. Tonight, our special guest is Dawn Brace, who is a case manager for Epilepsy Lifelink's Northeast Regional Epilepsy Group. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm really excited.
Well, that's a long title. So let's break it down.
Yeah.
Epilepsy Lifelinks. What's that?
Okay. Well, let me first start with the Northeast Regional Epilepsy Group.
All right, we'll go backwards.
Yeah. Just because I think that will probably explain it a little better. We are a practice that specializes in epilepsy. And the Epilepsy Lifelinks is sort of an agency within the practice. And we basically advocate on behalf of our patients and help them kind of make life a little easier for them.
So it's a medical practice.
It's a medical practice with neurologists who are epileptologists. In other words, they're neurologists who specialize in epilepsy.
And where are you located?
We are actually all over. We are generally all over the tri-state area. So we are. My office is actually based in the Bronx. I work in Westchester. I work in Manhattan. Kind of everywhere.
So how is Epilepsy Lifelinks different than somebody who just goes to their regular neurologist?
Well, I think we're very different in that we kind of understand epilepsy a little bit better because that's all we do. We just focus only on epilepsy. So we don't do Alzheimer's, we don't do dementia, we only focus on epilepsy. So that's kind of the core focus of what we do.
And it's not just pediatrics, is it?
No, actually we focus on pediatrics, we focus on the geriatrics as well as adults.
All right, so give me a layperson's definition of epilepsy.
Okay, well, epilepsy, without being too clinical, is sort of like an electrical storm in the brain. And it kind of causes neurons to signal abnormally, and as a result, there's like an alteration in consciousness, and, you know, the body kind of reacts to that activity that's happening in the brain.
That's pretty complicated, okay. Especially for me. So wait, so if epilepsy manifests itself as a seizure, right?
Yes.
But if you have one seizure, you don't have epilepsy, do you?
Very good. No, if you have one seizure, that does not classify that person as an individual who has epilepsy, no.
But if you have two, do you have epilepsy?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. There are diagnostic tests that need to be performed in order to classify that.
All right, so let's start with a seizure. How does somebody know, or how do you know if someone you're with is having a seizure?
Well, there are a variety of seizures. I guess case in point, last month my daughter, she's 5 years old, she had a seizure, and hers was due to a high spiked fever. She got really stiff, rigid, her eyes went up to the side of her head, and she just kind of started shaking.
How long did it last?
It lasted about a minute, and so obviously that's a clear sign of a seizure. Now, there are some people who could just stare and with their mouth agape and can be having a seizure, and those sometimes go undetected because it looks like they may be daydreaming or just kind of staring into space.
Now, does the person know they're having a seizure?
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. It's all depending on the particular type of seizure.
So what are you supposed to do if you're with somebody and it looks like they're having a seizure?
Well, we have to kind of be clear as to the type of seizure. Let's, for argument's sake, say, you know, what everyone would say, the grand mal, which is a generalized tonic-clonic seizure. In an instance like that, what you would want to do is you would want to kind of pad the person's head because they are going to be shaking very, rigorously. You're going to want to lay them on their side. Never stick anything in the mouth. I know it's like a myth, you know, stick something in the mouth, they could sever their tongue. Impossible. They can't do that. And then you're just going to want to kind of wait. And typically it should stop on its own.
So I bet you a minute seems like an hour.
A minute seems like an eternity, especially when it's your own child. Absolutely.
Now, I've seen people have these bracelets around their wrist. What's the purpose of that?
Those are very important. I'm glad you mentioned that because that is for the patient's safety. If they're someone who has active seizures, or maybe if they don't necessarily have active seizures, that's a medical alert bracelet. That bracelet has all their information, the seizure type, the type of medication they're on, their doctor's information, and that's to really ensure that they get the proper care in the event of a seizure.
Are people with epilepsy required to have a bracelet?
I would say so. That would be my personal opinion. I think it's just the smartest thing to do.
But legally, they don't have to.
Legally, no. They're not bound to it, but it's a responsible thing to do, I think.
Now, why wouldn't somebody want to do it?
Stigma.
The stigma of actually somebody knowing
right,
that you have it?
Right, because the thing about epilepsy is that you don't physically look like you have epilepsy, you know, if you're not having a seizure in that moment. And so maybe someone may not want to be classified as somebody who's disabled or anything like that.
Because they're concerned about how others will treat them?
Sure. And we typically see that in maybe teenagers. But they do have nice ones now, like kind of like the blinged out ones.
Right.
So they do have nice ones.
So do they look like the Lance Armstrong bracelets?
Right.
Or nicer?
Nice ones, you know. So they look cool. They look hip. They don't necessarily look like their grandma's bracelet.
All right. Now, let's get back to seizures. What causes a seizure?
Well, there are a variety of reasons why someone would have a seizure. One, it could be a genetically based issue, meaning, you know, someone in their family has seizures. It could be that they had a trauma to the brain with a car accident, or maybe a really hard fall. A lot of times, you know, if there's a loss of oxygen at birth, that could also be an issue for a seizure. So there are a variety of reasons, although there are like a small percentage, well, not really that small, about 30% of people, there is no really known origin as to why they have seizures.
So genetic, that means if your parents or grandparents had it, then you're more likely than someone else to get it?
Yes.
Can you be tested to determine whether or not you could be predisposed to having seizures?
That's an interesting question. I think, you know, looking back at the family history is such a key for the doctors. And that's usually one of their first questions, is anybody in your family that you know of has seizures? So that's a really good way of learning.
And if let's say you know that your grandfather had seizures and you want to get tested to see if you'd be a candidate, is there a way to determine, has the medical profession gone far enough so that they can say, yes, at some point in your life you're going to have one?
I don't think that's possible, actually, to my knowledge. I haven't come across that, no.
All right, and then if you know that you have them, is there anything you can do about it?
Well, you know, you're going to have to get the proper medication. So you're going to have to see somebody who specializes in it, a neurologist or, you know, specifically an epileptologist, somebody who specializes in epilepsy. And they're going to have to do a variety of tests to really determine the type of seizures you have, so they're able to then put you on the right treatments.
A treatment including medication?
Medication.
Is this something you'd most likely have to take for the rest of your life?
Well, not always. Sometimes, especially in children, they grow out of it. And so if a child has been seizure-free for a certain amount of years, and that's all depending on the parents as well as the doctor then, you know, gives the parent an option to say, hey, you know, let's scale back on the meds and see if the child is seizure-free. And again, that's all, you know, a conversation between the parents and the doctor.
So if the child is seizure-free for a certain period of time, it's possible to wean him or her off the medication?
Right, to see if that child is then for sure seizure-free.
And when people say, oh, the seizure's under control, what does that mean?
That means they're not having seizures. Unfortunately, in some individuals, they are on medications that do not work, and they still have what we call breakthrough seizures. So not everyone who are on medication live seizure-free.
But it's possible things could be worse without the medication.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah.
So just because the medication, you might think it's not working because you're still having seizures. If you didn't have the medication, it could be worse.
Right. It's also important to mention that they are compliant to the medication. They take it when they need to take it. There's a 2-hour window. So if they are supposed to take their medication at 12 p.m., they could take it between 12 and 2. If they take it at 5 p.m., they're in trouble. They should take it.
So it doesn't stay in your body for that long. So if you're supposed to take it twice a day and you miss your nighttime dose, by the morning you could potentially have a seizure.
Potentially, yes.
Oh, so that's really important to
It's very important to be compliant to medication. I mean, unfortunately, I can't tell you how many patients I have this conversation with. I mean, they forget, or they sometimes forget to, you know, go to the pharmacy to get more. So it's really, really important to be very, very organized with your meds.
Now I've heard that some people actually are able to tell that they're about to have a seizure. They get some type of aura.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
We call these people the lucky people because they do get an aura. Sometimes they get a kind of funny taste in their mouth. Sometimes they feel what a lot of them describe as a weird feeling. They don't know what weird is, but they do say weird feeling. A lot of them describe it that way. And they get maybe dizzy, nauseous, different things, depending on the person. And those people are lucky because if they do get really bad seizures, they're then able to go and, say, lay on the couch or lay on the bed and kind of protect themselves from damage that can happen if they were to fall.
How much of a warning do they get?
Everyone's different. I spoke to one person who said he was nauseous for about an hour before his actual seizure.
And does that mean the next time he's nauseous, he's going to have an hour until it happens?
Probably not exactly an hour. I don't know if there's a stopwatch to it, but I mean, he's had them long enough to know how to deal with it in that. And he calls himself lucky. He feels very lucky that he has that aura.
So are people who have the aura beforehand able to drive?
Well, in New York State, they are unable to drive within a year of their seizure. So if someone has a seizure, they've been seizure-free for 8 months, but then they have a seizure, they're not able to drive for another year. So they have to be seizure-free for 1 year. In New York State, we are not mandated to report to the DMV, but in New Jersey, the doctors are mandated to report. So we're asking people to be really responsible out there.
So even if a patient tells a doctor in New Jersey that they don't want to report it, the doctors are still required to?
By law, they have to report.
And in New York, they don't?
In New York, it's really up to the responsibility of the patient.
For the safety of the others on the road?
For the safety of the others on the road. I mean, we all know about the incident a couple of years ago where someone got, you know, unfortunately, it was fatal. They had a seizure behind the wheel. So that's why it's just imperative that they be responsible in this area.
And that the safety net is, they feel if it's been a year that you're okay?
Typically. And I don't know who made up that law, but that's pretty much the law. And again, you know, I know it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do, but it's really safe for the driver and the pedestrians.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. This week we're speaking with Don Brace about epilepsy. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Unexpected medical crises can turn lives upside down. Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Barbara called. I could tell something was wrong. She was calling from the hospital. Her husband had a stroke. Harry was going to need care in a long-term facility, perhaps for the rest of his life.
Barbara couldn't find the necessary documents.
Unfortunately, this is all too common. One spouse gets sick and the other spouse has absolutely no idea where the financial records are.
Harry quickly got the care he needed. In addition to helping Barbara gather and submit the appropriate paperwork, the experts at Littman Crooks also helped access government-financed health care to help pay Harry's medical bills.
Although we can't help Harry get better, Barbara has the peace of mind of knowing their hard-earned family assets will be available to help pay for Barbara's care in the future and to pass on to their children and grandchildren and not be eaten away by the cost of Harry's long-term care.
When a medical crisis strikes, call the law offices of Littman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Call 914-684-2100.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm Bernie Crooks from the law firm Littman Crooks. You can visit us at www.littmancrooks.com. And tonight we're speaking with Dawn Brace, and she's a case manager at Epilepsy Life Links in the Northeast Regional Epilepsy Group. And I guess we've been talking about some of the clinical aspects of epilepsy, Dawn. Tell us what you do. What's a case manager?
Well, my job is just so unique and so great. When I say unique, I mean, I don't know very many medical practices that has a component like we have. And really, we just focus on the well-being of the patient. It's just so important to really meet all of their needs. I assist 3 epileptologists, and what I do is, if after they see patients, if a patient has a need, the doctors then asked me to sit with the patient. And that is really a huge testament to me, to how much the doctors really care about this, the specifics of that patient, not just their medical care, but their overall social care as well. I help with all aspects, Medicaid, Medicare, helping them with Social Security, disability, getting the information about Social Security. And if there's no questions that we can necessarily help them with, I'm more than happy to refer them to an agency that is able to help them with their specific care.
So you're the go-to person.
Go-to person. I like
so
that, yeah.
So let's talk about some of the things you mentioned. Social Security disability. I guess that's if somebody can't work as a result of the epilepsy?
Yes, and that's rare because epilepsy can be debilitating, although there is a large population that's able to live a pretty high functional life. So a lot of times epilepsy is comorbid with something else that is enabling that person to be functional.
Okay, so then we also heard about Medicare or Medicaid.
Yes.
What role do they play?
Huge. As you know, medical costs are so high. And so if a person is not employed or underemployed, Medicaid really steps in a large way with their with regards to their medication, the diagnostic tests that are necessary in treating their epilepsy. And, you know, these government funds are really, really, really important to helping many patients with epilepsy thrive.
Now, is there a concern with the current economy and budget situation that maybe things will change?
You know, it's interesting you ask. I already have patients talking to me about that, really just concerned. Who have been laid off. I had a conversation with someone recently who was laid off, and as a result, his stress level is high, and he's been having more seizures. So it's really affecting people more than just financially.
All right, so you mentioned fever, stress. What are some of the other things that could make somebody who's prone to seizures have more seizures, or perhaps maybe somebody who's never had one have one for the first time?
Well, for the people who are prone, it's really a good idea for them to pay attention to what their precipitating factors are, their triggers. So it could be a flashing light. It could be fatigue. It could be stress. Dehydration, hunger, again, not being compliant to their medication within a particular time frame. So there are a variety of things. Lack of rest, if I didn't mention that, that's also a really big thing. And for individuals who's never had a seizure, it could be high fever. That's usually in smaller children. Traumatic brain injury. They could have had an infection in the brain like encephalitis or meningitis. So there are a variety of things.
So the strobe lights are a bad deal?
For some people. Not all people with epilepsy, but certainly for some.
And not getting enough sleep can also induce one?
Yes. Sleep deprivation is huge. You know, the brain starves, essentially. And so that is definitely not a good idea for somebody who has seizures to not get the proper amount of rest.
Now, if somebody has a seizure, do they know that they had one after they come out of it?
That's very interesting you said that. I just had a conversation with someone just this week. No memory for her. Although for some, they know they had it. Maybe they have some kind of trauma. Maybe they fell if they were at home alone. They woke up and, you know, maybe had some kind of trauma to their body. A lot of times they wake up, they have terrible headaches. They're excessively tired. And so for someone who's living with epilepsy who has active seizures, those are definitely huge signs.
But it's not like they could tell you what happened while
no.
they were seizing.
For some, no. For some, yes. But that all goes into the typical the particular seizure that they have.
So there's not only just one kind.
No, there are many seizures. There are partial seizures. There are generalized seizures. Within those partial, there are complex partial. There are simple. I mean, there's just so many. And that's why I'm so happy to be here today. And if I can mention that today's Purple Day, and you have a purple tie, and I'm excited that you're wearing one. I'm wearing a purple sweater. And March 26th is Epilepsy Day. And I love the idea behind it because a little girl in Canada who has epilepsy, her and her mother together have created this day to really bring awareness on epilepsy. And so I'm really happy to be here today for that reason.
So it's the first annual Epilepsy Day.
Yes, first annual Epilepsy Day.
Well, hopefully there'll be many, many more.
I'm sure there will be with programs like this and different people who are committed to spreading the word, I'm sure there will be.
Yeah. Do you find that the public doesn't really understand this disease?
Absolutely. You'd be surprised. I mean, another component or another thing that I do as a part of my job is I go into the community and I do talks on epilepsy, seizure recognition, and first aid. And even this week, I was with some nurses, and they said, well, what should we stick in their mouths? Nothing. That's a myth.
And the people think that because it prevents you from swallowing your tongue?
Right. You cannot, one, you can't sever your tongue, and two, you can't swallow. You need your tongue to swallow, right? So if you severed it, you can't swallow it. Right. So, yeah.
All right. So education is important.
Education is huge, and I like to go into the schools. I like to go into nursing homes. I like to pretty much wherever I feel like, you know, the need is to be met, I like to be there.
There's certainly a lot to learn. I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday evening from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. We'll be back with Dawn Brace right after this.
Unexpected medical crises can turn lives upside down. Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Barbara called. I could tell something was wrong. She was calling from the hospital. Her husband had a stroke. Harry was going to need care in a long-term facility, perhaps for the rest of his life.
Barbara couldn't find the necessary documents.
Unfortunately, this is all too common. One spouse gets sick and the other spouse has absolutely no idea where the financial records are.
Harry quickly got the care he needed. In addition to helping Barbara gather and submit the appropriate paperwork, the experts at Littman Crooks also helped access government-financed health care to help pay Harry's medical bills.
Although we can't help Harry get better, Barbara has the peace of mind of knowing their hard-earned family assets will be available to help pay for Barbara's care in the future and to pass on to their children and grandchildren and not be eaten away by the cost of Harry's long-term care.
When a medical crisis strikes, call the law offices of Littman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Call 914-684-2100.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind. I'm Bernie Crooks from Littman Crooks. As you know, our law firm specializes in special education advocacy, special needs planning, elder law and estate planning. And tonight we're talking to Dawn Brace. And Dawn, you know, unfortunately, not everybody responds positively to medication. So is there any other treatment alternative for these people?
Yes, there are. There's the ketogenic diet, which is a very special diet for individuals with epilepsy that doctors tend to only try in children.
So that's keto, K-Y-T-O?
Actually, it's K-E-T-O-G-E-N-I-C.
For people who want to Google it.
Yes.
Okay, so that they'll try it with small children?
Usually children. They found to be somewhat of a success in children.
And what does the diet encompass?
Oh, man. Well, it's kind of high fats.
A lot of chocolate?
No. Well, no, definitely not. Well, they have to kind of use a lot of kind of saturated or like lard. Like they fry things a lot.
And that's supposed to stop the seizure? And it's been proven to work?
Somewhat. It's somewhat of a success in children.
So to go on it, would your doctor have to prescribe it or you just decide you want to go on it?
The doctor with the dietitian.
Because then they tell you what you can eat and cannot eat.
Right.
And the way I understand it is you can't cheat.
No, it has to. There's a high commitment. Right. And that's why the doctors tend to not – that's not the person they tend to want to try because there's such a high commitment. All the meals, everything needs to be prepared a very specific way.
All right. So that's one. What else is there?
There's VNS, which is the vagus nerve stimulator. That's an implantation.
Tell me about that.
Okay, so a VNS is very similar to a pacemaker, and there are two parts to it. There is the wires that are connected to the vagus nerve, and then there's a small device that is very similar to a pacemaker, and that's implanted right underneath the skin by the collarbone.
Is that where the vagus nerve is?
Right. Well, okay. It's up on the neck. Okay. But that's where they implant it. And so in addition to that, there's a magnet that is swiped against the VNS, the vagus nerve stimulator. And so that kind of triggers an electrical current that either could stop a seizure or prevent the severity of a seizure.
All right, so you have the ketogenic diet, the vagus nerve stimulator. Anything else?
Epilepsy surgery.
What's that?
Well, That is very specific, and it is all contingent on the type of seizure that that particular patient has. And there are a variety of things that a doctor needs to do in order to, before a person becomes a potential candidate. There are a variety of tests that needs to happen.
So it's brain surgery.
Absolutely, brain surgery.
And what they're looking to do is to take out the portion of the brain that's causing the seizure?
Either take out a portion. Again, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but there are a variety of things they do. In addition to that, they could implant things to help with either lessening the seizure or altogether taking away the seizure.
Do you know anyone who's had the surgery?
Oh, yes.
Successfully?
Yes. We have patients that we've treated at our practice who've had the surgery and who are doing quite well. But not everyone who has the surgery no longer has seizures. But we do have some people, absolutely, that are doing quite well.
It's a scary thing, opening up the brain.
Yes, it is. But we do have surgeons who are highly qualified and who do a great job.
All right, so we've got the diet, we've got the vagus nerve stimulator, the surgery. Those are the three options, basically, if the medication doesn't work?
Right.
If the medication doesn't work, are there any, how should I say it, experimental medications?
There are actually experimental medications, and those are medications that have not gone through the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and those people are kind of participants to tests. And so it's, again, it needs to be very specific to the type of seizure that that person has, to the test that they're performing.
So they might not be a candidate for it.
No, may not be a candidate, but
okay,
that
so
is one.
But we've got four things you can do if the medication is not working.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take one last quick break and then we'll be right back to talk to Dawn Brace right after this. Okay.
All his life, little Stevie has been special. When he grows up, he probably won't be able to live on his own or work to support himself. Stevie's parents already worry about what will become of their sweet boy after they're gone. Kim was a corporate executive until a drunk driver ended her career and nearly her life. Now she has a traumatic brain injury, a sizable settlement, but no clear plan for the future. Stevie and Kim could each use a special needs trust to secure their finances, care, and maximum independence while letting them keep their public benefits such as SSI and Medicaid. Who can set up a special needs trust? The law firm of Littman Crooks, members of the Special Needs Alliance, a national network of disability and public benefits lawyers. If you or someone you love has special needs, greater peace of mind is just a phone call away. Call Littman Crooks today, 684-2100, or visit littmancrooks.com. Because special people need special plans.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm Bernie Crooks from the law firm Littman Crooks. And tonight we're talking to Dawn Brace and we've been talking about epilepsy. Dawn, we've got a couple minutes left. Tell us about some of the support that your organization offers to patients.
Well, we have a support group that we have once a month at each office, and I find those to be kind of like the heartbeat of our practice because you get to hear how people are really feeling and how they're thriving, and also, you know, it's a great way for them to really kind of be proactive in living a really successful life and getting the right referrals and information on how to do that. We do vocational advocacy. We do job development, placement. And also we help individuals kind of with their skill set and how they will be successful in a job. We also do social service advocacy, and that is a full spectrum of things, in addition to helping individuals with, like I said earlier, Medicaid, Medicare, home services, getting them help with maybe getting into a nursing home or independent living facility. So there's just a variety of things, not to mention children who may have special ed and IEPs. We also help get into that and go into the schools if they need help, et cetera.
Will epilepsy in and of itself be a reason for a child to have an IEP?
Not at all. Not at all. We have many children who are doing quite well, who have graduated high school, gone into college, who are doing well. But then we do also, on a low spectrum of things, do have children who you know, cognitively are not able to do as well and who have IEPs and special ed.
And is that always related to the epilepsy or sometimes
not? Not always, no. Not at all.
Now, you mentioned support. Do you have support for the brothers and sisters, other family members?
Yes, yes, definitely. We could do referrals for counseling. Again, we have our support group. If they need more information, we do education with families. So we do definitely support the families.
Not an easy thing for younger or older brother or sister.
Yes, and parents. Parents and caregivers are usually the ones who do worse, so to speak, than the actual patient.
Yeah, that's true a lot of times. All right, so if people want to learn more about your group, what do they do?
Well, they could go to www.epilepsygroup.com, and anybody could feel free to call me on my direct line. I'm happy to take any questions.
Which is?
718-654-6184.
Okay, so give us the website address one more time.
www.epilepsygroup.com. And my direct line is 718-654-6184. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Please feel free to call.
Dawn, I'm so glad you were able to be on
Thank
the show.
Thank you so much for having me
especially
here.
Especially on Epilepsy Day.
Yes, I'm so excited. And I'm so happy. And everybody, just mark that on your calendars for next year, March 26th. Wear purple. Thanks.
All right. This is the Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney Show. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks. Till next week, good night, everyone.
Thank you, Bernie.